When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go paper-tarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from howstuffworks.com. Join Josh and Chuck, the guys who bring you stuff you should know, as they take a trip around the world to help you get smarter in a topsy-turvy economy. Check out the all-new Super Stuff Guide to the Economy from HowStuffWorks.com, available now exclusively on iTunes.
Welcome back to the podcast. Thanks for tuning in. This is High Speed Stuff. I'm Ben, and I'm hanging out here today with our auto editor, Scott.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Scott.
How's it going?
You know what? It's going okay.
Hey, look at me.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah, I've had a pretty good time today. on a 1 to 10, I would say today is right now at an 8, but let's take it up to a 9.
Oh, sure.
I want to do something a little different. Mm-hmm. You know, usually I bring up some kind of topic, but you're the expert here, so I want to give this one to you. What do you want to do today?
Hey, I've got a plan.
You've got a plan.
I've got a plan. I've prepped for the show. I've looked up some information that I think is pretty interesting, or at least I think it's interesting. I don't know if you will or not, but I found some interesting facts and figures from the IndyCar series,
uh-huh,
as well as from the NHRA.
The drag racers.
Drag racers, the National Hot Rod Association, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Because May is, you know, approaching. And that's time for the Indianapolis 500, and that always gets me a little bit fired up. So that's why I was kind of investigating IndyCars right now. And I got some information from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway site, uh-huh, the facts and figures that they publish, you know, right there. So this information is from them, direct from them, as well as from the NHRA.
Oh, I like it. Yeah. I like where you're going with this.
Yeah, and there's kind of a back and forth that's going to be happening here, but interesting stuff from both series.
Are we saying maybe kind of a comparison, contrast?
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, they're each really, you know, each series does what they do really well.
And they do different things.
They do very different things.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay,
the difference between IndyCar and drag racing, extremely different. But, yeah, it's a pretty good list, and I think you'll find it interesting. So let's kind of go back and forth. We could talk about whatever you want, or we can just move on because, you know, but that's just the way it is.
Let's do this. I'm excited. I don't know much about this.
All right, well, let's just get into it. And, you know, some are more interesting than others, so, you know, maybe we can just skip past. You can give me the nod or whatever you want to do that we can move on. I guess we'll just go down the list and say that, okay, the IndyCar engines are 3.5 liters. They run on 100% fuel-grade ethanol.
Ethanol?
So, yeah, they run on ethanol. And they have more than 650 horsepower, which is 4 times that of the average street car.
Wow.
Yeah, well, okay. Not very impressive, right?
I'm surprised.
It is impressive, really, when you consider the weight of the car and everything else involved. But now let me blow you away with this drag racing stuff. Because now, the nitromethane-powered engines of the NHRA Top Fuel Dragsters and Funny Cars. Now, these are the big, long, rail-looking type cars,
yeah,
the really long ones. And the Funny Cars, the kind where the entire top lifts up,
one-piece
body. Those have approximately 7,000 horsepower, which is about 37 times that of the average car.
Wow.
Yeah, 7,000 horsepower. That's impressive to me.
No wonder they go in a straight line.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's pretty quick. Oh, and one other thing about IndyCar. I'm messing up my list already.
You're doing a great job, man.
Each of the 8 pistons in an IndyCar series engine travels nearly 1 mile up and down in the cylinder every single minute.
What 1 mile a minute if you combine the up and down?
The distance that the piston travels in 1 minute is 1 mile.
I have a hard time conceiving that.
I know, because it's very short distance, really. But, I mean, it's going so rapidly that it's traveling 1 mile every minute. Another thing about the cylinders in an Atari dragster.
Uh-huh.
Each one of the 8 cylinders in a top-fuel dragster produces around 750 horsepower.
Each cylinder?
Each cylinder, that's right. So that equals the entire horsepower of a NASCAR engine.
Which is still 4 times.
No, no. 8 times that.
Okay. I meant the average car.
That's right. No.
4 times. A NASCAR still.
Here.
Yeah. I'm just mixed up, but that's blowing me away.
That's
so,
right. One cylinder in a top fuel dragster produces as much horsepower as an entire NASCAR engine.
They are very different machines.
Yes, they are. That's right. That's the way we drug NASCAR into this, too.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. We'll talk about acceleration. How about that?
Let's talk about acceleration.
Okay. You're not as blown away by this list as I thought you would be. IndyCar series car accelerates from 0 to 100 in less than 3 seconds.
Less? Really?
0 to 100 in less than 3 seconds. Do you hear me?
Wow.
I thought you would be standing up.
I can't because the microphone's on the table, but I would be if we had headphones.
All right, so that's impressive, right? I mean,
yeah.
3 seconds, 0 to 100.
3 seconds to 100 miles an hour.
Now let me tell you about the drag car. The top fuel dragster accelerates from 0 to 100 in less than 0.8 seconds. So can you imagine your body accelerating in a huge vehicle?
Yeah.
From 0 to 100 in 0.8 seconds.
I mean, no, I can't imagine that.
I know.
That's like going into space or something.
That's 11. Now, the numbers here, it says it's 11 seconds quicker than it takes a production Porsche 911 Turbo to do the same thing. And that's considered an just outright fast car on the street.
Wow, how can...
Pretty impressive, isn't it?
Okay, yeah, I don't... Impressive. I just, not really to interrupt, but I want to ask you, are people even capable of reacting? You know, if you're a driver in that vehicle?
Well, yeah, but once it's in motion, it's in motion. I mean, once it happens, that's it. And, of course, the driver reaction is what starts this whole thing, and that's key in drag racing is, you know, launch speed, and, well, there's control. There's a lot of different things that are involved in drag racing, of course, but... Yeah, that's got to be pretty taxing on your body, I would think, to go from 0 to 100 in 0.8 seconds.
Less than 1 second.
Less than 1 second, yeah.
Man.
It's got to be intense. I'd love to feel it.
I would be terrified.
When it leaves the starting line,
yeah,
it leaves the line with a force nearly 5 times that of gravity, which is the same force of space shuttle as when it leaves the launch pad.
Oh, wow. You know, I just pulled out that comparison. Conversationally, I had no idea. It really is.
You're peeking at my notes again.
I was not. I promise you, man. Scout's honor.
No, I believe it. Yeah, I believe you. Okay. Well, anyways, we'll move on. Okay. Yep. Well, actually, let's talk about it. Okay, so you got to stop that power, right?
Yes.
You got to stop. So when they, you know, they use parachutes to stop these cars.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So when they're slowed, the reverse force is more than 7 times that of gravity when the chutes deploy. Yeah. So imagine you're traveling at, you know. Geez, I don't even know what they go now. 280, 300 miles an hour, whatever it is. It's up there.
Yeah.
It's close to 300. They hit the parachutes. The parachutes are kind of like an instant, you know, deceleration.
Uh-huh.
7 times the force of gravity is what that driver experiences when those chutes open.
Wow.
So that's greater than the force of 0 to 100 in 0.8 seconds.
This is,
I don't know, I'm going to guess 280 again. Mm-hmm. Not zero. They don't instantly stop by any means, but that force is really intense. I mean, it pulls them way forward. You know, the body wants to keep going forward.
That's amazing that people can do this.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised it doesn't break ribs and collarbones and, you know, all that.
Because we mentioned that before when we spoke about car safety. Mm-hmm. You know, death-proof cars, I think, was the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, what's What's going on with Indy cars? Yeah.
Well, we'll talk speed and distance because we've talked that before.
Yeah.
The distance that an Indy car travels in a blink of an eye, literally.
37 something You're miles.
Very good. Good memory. Yeah, it's 37 feet.
Excuse me.
In I think it was that 1/10 of a second.
Is very, very short.
So you can
amount
probably
of time.
Imagine that this is also impressive. And when they're traveling at 220 miles per hour, which is, I guess, not that unusual, you know, on the straightaways in Indianapolis or somewhere like that,
man,
super speedway, 220 miles per hour, the distance they travel in 1 second is greater than a football field length.
More than 100 yards.
More than 100 yards. It's more than the length of a football field every second.
Every second.
Every second.
I wonder just how far these cars could drive if they were just on a straightaway, you know, in the desert or something.
I don't know. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, when you think about the distance, I mean, really picture yourself standing. I mean, you could just stand anywhere. Mm-hmm. Look at the end of a football field, you know, to tunnel them around, go to a park or whatever, you know, pro game.
Yeah.
Imagine traveling that distance in 1 second. And doing that, you know, it's not just, you know, quick acceleration and you're done. It's constant. That's the speed you're traveling. You've got to be able to react to whatever's happening that far in advance, you know, and it's changing fast. I mean, it's not a slow game by any means.
Mm-hmm. And then for some races, you have to do that for quite a long time.
Yeah, that's right, 500 miles.
Yeah,
and, you know,
yeah.
Sometimes less, but 500 miles of that, it's got to be pretty wearing. Yeah. Okay, so now we're talking distance and speed.
Okay.
The NHRA, the top fuel dragsters, travel the length of more than 4 football fields in less than 5 seconds.
What?
So, yeah.
Okay.
They go straight line. Yeah, I know. It's
hard
strange,
to think about.
But the Indy car is sustaining 220 miles per hour for that 1 second, for that period of time that we're talking about.
Yeah.
This is going, and, you know, then they're going to turn. They're going to turn left or they're going to turn right or whatever they're going to
do.
Drag cars go in a straight line for, you know, a quarter mile, which is, I guess, 1,320 feet.
Okay.
So, quarter mile. And they do that in less than 5 seconds.
Man.
Yeah. I know.
It seems like if only you could turn without risking your life and limb, that would be kind of an awesome car to have.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, of course, it'd be an awesome car. Yeah, I mean, but they just can't turn all that well. That's right. They just they have trouble with the turns. That's why they're built for straight line speed,
yeah.
And that's really it.
Made to do different things.
Very purposeful or purposely built. Okay, let's move on here. Thankfully, right?
No. I'm still back there in the football
Here's an interesting one that we talk about this a lot. Fuel consumption.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
So here, maybe we're talking your stuff here. Maybe. Fuel mileage of an IndyCar series car is less than 2 miles per gallon.
Really?
Yeah, less than 2 miles per gallon. A car burns approximately 1.3 gallons of fuel per lap at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. 1.3 gallons per lap.
Man.
Mm-hmm. And they run they go 200 laps during a race.
But that is and
it's 2.5 miles in length.
Yeah, but let's go back just for a second to one of the initial figures that we mentioned here. Ethanol. They run on ethanol.
That's right.
So technically, they could qualify as alternative fuel vehicles.
Yeah, technically, they are
They're
alternative fuel vehicles.
Not
that's right.
Quite as efficient.
Yeah, an alternative fuel vehicle that gets 2 miles per gallon. Yeah, that's right.
Can I ask you? This is a little bit of a strange question. With the, I guess they're sacrificing efficiency for performance, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Wait.
Wait. They're sacrificing fuel efficiency.
Yes.
No?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And there, I guess the question is why do they run on these specific mixtures? Or for them it's pure ethanol, but for the drag racing it's
nitromethane. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it?
It's alcohol. I mean, alcohol burns incredibly. I mean, it's very explosive. It's like it's extremely combustible. The ethanol is less combustible. I'm sure that, you know, each of the engines in, you know, each of the series are tuned for that specific fuel, and that's why they use that. Now, the switch to ethanol, they used to run, I think it was alcohol. I'll probably get letters about this, but I think they ran alcohol. I'll probably get it before the end of the podcast here.
Oh, but, yeah, we'll just go back to it. But what about the drag racers then?
Nitromethane?
Yeah,
they've run that for a long, long time. They've not always, of course, But again, extremely combustible. It's just very explosive fuel, and they need that power to develop that type of power. The 7,000 horsepower that we're talking about,
yeah,
there has to be just an incredible amount of force happening in that engine in order to make it, you know, make it develop that type of horsepower.
Yeah. Okay.
Nitromethane is something that they really, if they used a lower grade fuel, mm-hmm. well, first of all, I don't know if it would even work because the engines are specially tuned for that type of fuel. But if they were to detune them or however, you know, whatever it would take them to run that, they wouldn't be able to produce 7,000 horsepower like they do.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They need something just extremely volatile. Where were we? Fuel consumption.
Fuel consumption.
Okay. Okay, now you can imagine that top fuel dragsters burn a lot of fuel, right?
Yeah.
All right. This is unbelievable.
All right.
Top fuel dragsters and funny cars consume between 4 and 5 gallons of fuel during a quarter-mile run, which is equivalent to between 16 and 20 gallons per mile.
So, before we go too far,
yeah.
You got that from their website.
I did.
That is incontrovertibly true.
Yes, this is from the NHRA.
Man.
So you're saying, now we're not talking miles per gallon, we're talking gallons per mile.
Yeah.
Gallons per mile. Between 16 and 20 gallons.
GPM.
Yeah, that's right. Gallons per mile. Yeah, I think I had a car once that got gallons per mile. Yeah, I mean, so 4 or 5 gallons per quarter mile run, which is unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
When you're talking about, you know, like a full pass, how much they really use, mm-hmm. the burnout, the pass, and then, you know, back, you know, when they back up and they do the full run, that, you know, idle down, everything else. Between 10 and 12 gallons of fuel are used in that time period.
Just the
full run, like from start to finish, between 10 and 12 gallons. From when they start the car to when they shut the car off, when they, you know, after they hit the parachutes,
uh-huh.
turn the car off, that's 10 to 12 gallons of fuel.
You're making me rethink my plan to get a dragster.
That's right. And let's see. Now, one other thing about the fuel pump. Now, you've recently done a fuel pump on your car.
I did.
Yeah.
I did do
which I thought was pretty bold of you to do that. That's a rough one on the car that you have.
Maybe naive would be a better
word.
No,
it was good. It was good.
That's a story for
you. Yeah, it is. But that was good. The fuel pump for an NHRA top fuel dragster. So you've filled one of these in your hands. You know what they are, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Delivers 65 gallons of fuel per minute, which is the equivalent to 8 bathroom showers running at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it the same size
No, I don't. No, I don't think so. I think
surely
everything
it has
is
to be
huge.
Yeah.
I would have guessed that the piping on this thing must look like a fire hose.
You know, right.
Yeah. It's not like the little fuel line that you're used to. Yeah. Anyways, that was pretty impressive. I thought
that is.
And the fuel line pressure is between 400 and 500 pounds, which is 20 times greater than the pressure that you could experience in your car.
Which I guess it would have to be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, it'd have to be pretty heavy-duty stuff.
Well, I guess I kind of asked a stupid question there because of course, it would have to be, right? They're not going to just say, hey, let's make the pressure higher.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. Everything has a purpose. Everything has a reason. I mean, it has to force it in. I mean, because if you're going through 10 to 12 gallons in that brief amount of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, of course, there's 5 critical seconds there. Where it has to have plenty of fuel. Oh, you know what? One other thing. You know how much the fuel costs per gallon?
No. How much does it cost?
$16 a gallon.
Really?
Yeah, $16 a gallon for this nitromethane.
So every race, just the fuel alone, that's
mm-hmm.
pretty strange.
Substantial.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's expensive to drag race.
I was assuming, but now I know.
Yeah, that's right. Probably more so than we know, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The cars only weigh 1,565 pounds, okay? The downforce that car produces, you know, the pressure downward at speed, you know, the amount of pressure that it puts on the ground, 5,000 pounds of downforce at 220 miles per hour. That is enough for the car to run upside down if it could maintain that speed. So that, let's say if we had a tunnel, let's say with rounded edges,
uh-huh.
I don't know exactly how this would work, but let's say the car were traveling 220 miles per hour and it were to edge its way up onto the wall,
mm-hmm.
it could go all the way up to the top and run inverted
and drive on the
at
ceiling?
That speed and drive on the ceiling at 220 miles per hour.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool too.
We can't have races like that.
No.
Because that would be disastrous.
No.
Okay, so downforce then is just what it sounds like. It's the force exerted pushing the car against the surface.
Correct, correct. Yeah, okay. NASCAR people know all about downforce because that's all involved in the draft and how the vehicles behave, you know, when they spin around. Of course, that's bad, but downforce has its place in racing, but they also definitely has its place in racing. It's also a balancing game because you don't want to have too much downforce in cars that have to turn, in cars that have to go in a straight line.
Okay.
Straight line cars have to have, that slows you down in a straight line and helps you in the corners.
I think.
Does that make sense?
Yes. I think okay. I might see where you're going with this, and before we get to it, I just want to see are we going to downforce on the drag racing?
Of course we are.
wait, because
yeah, on my huge, you know, I promise you, we're nearing the end.
No,
we're
no, this is, yeah. this is pretty
some,
cool.
Some of it is, I agree. Some of it, you know, I could, yeah.
Oh, you're being.
Maybe we could do some editing.
Listen, maybe this is boring to you because you already know all about it.
That could be.
But
could
be. The question I have is really about the wheels on the drag racers. Does that have anything to do with downforce?
The wheels on the drag? No, not really. No, that's all about on the drag racers.
Yeah,
the huge wheels you're talking
yes.
about. Those are pure grip. That's grip.
Oh.
Have you ever seen one of a dragster? This isn't on our list, thankfully, right?
what?
You ever seen one of a top fuel dragster? You know, you're talking the long vehicles again
yes.
with the huge wheels on the back.
Uh-huh.
When they start, if you've ever seen an extreme slow motion or high speed photography shot of those things. The wheel is staying planted. The tire is staying planted on the ground. The wheel inside the tire is turning already,
yeah.
So it creates this wrinkle on the edge, like it's called a wrinkle wall, I believe, and that helps it adhere and grip. And it's kind of like when you take off with your foot, like if you're going to run,
uh-huh.
if you dig your foot in and push, you kind of get the same sensation that you know your body's already in motion, your foot's still staying in place just for that brief second before you take off. But that helps; that gives you the momentum that you need. Because if your foot slipped the second that you started to run, you would fall, or you wouldn't be able to go very far. You know, if you're on ice or something like that.
Right.
So if you have a surface to grip onto, that's what that thing is doing. It's this extremely wide, grippy, you know, hot rubber tire that's gripping onto the rubber that it just laid down during that burnout that they do.
Okay. Okay.
So it's rubber on rubber. It's very, very adhesive. Very, very sticky.
Yeah. I'm sorry if I took it to a tangent, man.
No,
I just
that's
always
good.
Wondered
that's,
about
that's
that one.
Something else. That's good. That's really good. Okay. So we've talked about downforce and IndyCar.
Yeah.
NHRA dragster between 4,000 and 8,000 pounds of drag downforce rather.
So that's more than enough.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, between 4,000 and 8,000 pounds of downforce, I mean, that's an awful lot of downforce for a car that's going in a straight line.
Yeah.
But they would take off like, you know, like a wing or like a jet if they didn't. And you sometimes will see this, you know, if the wheels go up a little bit too high.
Mm-hmm. They
kind of launch themselves.
Yeah,
over the wall, they go
that.
Into the other lane. You know, they could be very, very traumatic. I mean, when you see that happen, I mean,
sure.
Dramatic, I should say.
Sure.
So yeah, there's reason that you know they produce some downforce and actually quite a bit. One of the things is that it's actually some of these cars are designed to run the first part of the track. Some of the drag cars are actually designed to run the first part of the track with the front wheels in the air. So they're only on two wheels for most of it. I mean, not most of it, but a significant part of it, maybe a couple hundred feet even.
How is that advantageous?
Just less rolling resistance. And,
okay.
You know, you've got two wheels on the ground versus four.
It seems
power.
Like that would make it flip, though.
Just sheer power.
I guess
it's a balancing
downforce.
Game. It's a balancing game. I mean, if you go too far, you flip. If you don't do it enough, you got too much rolling resistance. You're not on it enough, I guess.
It's a dangerous game.
Yeah, it is a very dangerous
I
game.
I just wanted to say that.
I know.
Yeah. So, but racing season, right?
Yeah.
Do we have? We've got some more, huh?
Very little. We'll go through them quick.
No. I want to hear them
mercifully. We'll go through them quick. Okay. Well, IndyCar tires. You were just talking about tires.
Yeah.
Let's talk about IndyCar tires. The weight of an IndyCar series tire, the front tire, so it's slightly smaller than the rear tire, but
okay.
not much. 18 pounds.
18 pounds.
18 pounds. Very lightweight.
That's it.
Yeah. Very lightweight. They're huge. If you look at them, if you watch
yeah.
the guy changing them, these are big tires. They weigh 18 pounds. That's pretty impressive to me.
This is going to sound stupid, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought the guy who was changing the tires was just pretty strong.
Well, they are pretty strong, but this, because, you know, they do other things, and, you know, they are, right. I mean, okay, it's 18 pounds, fine, but you're throwing it around like it's, you know, nothing. You've got one in each hand.
Yeah.
That's the other thing is that, you know, as you're taking one off, you're putting the other one in place simultaneously. So very skilled. There is tread on those tires, which very little tread. You know, you think that they're slick, but there's very little tread. 3/32 of an inch, which is slightly thicker than a credit card.
That's all the tread that's on
it? I know. I mean, my tires right now have that, but that's just because of neglect.
Right.
Yeah.
And
they're terrible in the rain.
I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah. And, okay, well, this is kind of cool, too.
All right.
Speed of a tire. The tread area of a racing tire approaches the temperature of boiling water, 212 degrees Fahrenheit. So at those levels, the tread area becomes kind of like a tar-like consistency, and it helps the tire adhere to track. 212 degrees or somewhere near that is what the temperature of the tire is that contacts the track.
So when they're changing these tires, because pit crews have to do that, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So when they're changing the tire, wow.
I know.
So it almost liquefies.
Yeah, that's right. It does. It actually does liquefy. It turns into a tar.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, you're going 220 miles per hour and you suddenly have to turn left pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That helps.
Man.
That's yeah, that's amazing. Why, and you see, you know, when you've probably heard them mention cold tires before, or, you know,
yes.
They've got cold tires or new tires, fresh tires, whatever. They're warming them up. They have to keep them this temperature. They have to get this heat going so that they can adhere to the track.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. I thought.
Yeah, I always wondered about.
Okay. Right. One other thing is that they've got these big wide tires, right? You think
yes.
That's a lot of rubber on the ground, right?
Uh-huh.
Truth is that. The total area of all four tires, the actual area that contacts with the surface, is equal to about 1 square foot, which means that, see this piece of paper?
Yeah.
That's about all that's actually touching the ground on an IndyCar when it's traveling at 220 miles per hour turning left.
So about 1 square foot of tar.
That's tar. Did you say tar or tire?
Tar. I said T-A-R. My accent defeats me. Yeah, well.
Change the tires. Tars.
A square foot of TAR, tar-like substance.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's extremely adhesive, and that's way more than passenger cars have, I'll tell you that. I mean,
yeah, definitely.
Because, I mean, look at the size of an IndyCar tire versus the size of the tires on your car, so you can imagine that, you know, you don't have that much rubber on the ground. You think you do, but you really don't.
Yeah, you tell yourself you do, at least.
Yeah, that's right. It's very, very small, really. And then, okay, the speed again, 220 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
The front tire, again, these are smaller, slightly smaller. The front tires rotate at a rate of 43 times per second. So that means that over the course of a single lap at the IMS, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the front tire will experience approximately 1,955 revolutions, and the rear tires experience 1,800 revolutions.
Oh, okay, and, so they are.
Yeah, so considering a normal fuel stint is 30 laps, which means, you know, they have to come in for fuel after 30 laps, each tire could experience more than 60,000 revolutions before it's changed for a fresh set.
They go through those tires pretty quickly.
Yes,
huh?
They do. Yeah,
yeah.
They're not cheap either. I don't have any, you know.
I am going to take your word for it,
thankfully,
man.
I don't have any information about, you know, prices or anything like that. But, yeah, I'm sure they're expensive and, you know, once they're done, they're done. That's it. You know, they use them for 30 laps, and that's it, or less. A lot of times it's less.
I've got to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
If you had the opportunity to drive in a race,
mm-hmm.
would you go with IndyCars or would you go with drag racers?
IndyCar. No doubt.
Why?
Just my favorite. I spent a lot of time when I was young. I lived in Indianapolis, and I used to spend the entire month of May at the track. No doubt about it, I would be an IndyCar.
Did you?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan.
Have you ever been to Atlanta Motor Speedway?
I have not.
Yeah?
I've lived here for some time now, and I haven't gone yet.
It's a pretty big event when it really gets going.
So. I'm sure it is, yeah. I'd like to go down there. Maybe this summer I can.
I think it's a pretty good place to see some excellent racing firsthand.
I think I've already missed the big event for the year, but there's a lot of events happening there, I know.
There are a lot, but the big one may have already passed.
Yeah.
But I am still actually kind of bowled over by these facts.
Are you really?
Yeah. You can't tell. I got my poker face
well,
on.
Yeah, I guess
but,
so.
But I am seriously reconsidering buying a dragster now. You know,
well,
I don't know, man.
That's
first
pricey.
First
it's
the flying cars are gone. Now the dragsters.
It's expensive.
Well, I have a dream.
Yeah, that's a good dream.
Okay. Well, so we're pretty backed up on this. We've got the pretty much got it out.
Yeah,
here.
You know what? I tell you, when you look at them, if you go to these sites, if you go to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway site, the official site, IMS, and look at these facts and figures and really, you know, digest them, really look at them and think about what they're saying in each one, you'll be blown over by that stuff. I mean, it's really impressive. And the same with the NHRA. Again, they've got, you know, this list of facts and figures that, you know, are just, if you take just a moment to look at them and understand what they're saying there, and then try to compare it to what you've ever experienced, it's just beyond me. I mean, what these guys go through.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. I love it.
I guess that about wraps it up for us as far as racing, but there's one more thing we should do, right?
I think you're right.
Listener mail time?
Listener mail time. All right, so our listener mail today comes from Roy. And Roy listened to our Trend podcast, our Automotive Trend.
Oh, yeah, Past Automotive Trends.
Automotive Trends, that's right. And he had some good points. He was pretty complimentary, actually. He said he liked the stuff that we talked about. And he had a list of his own. He has about 10 here. We'll just go through a couple. But they're all good suggestions. They're all good mentions of things that, you know, he pines for or, you know, maybe had heard of in the past that, you know, are long since gone.
Oh, other trends.
Other trends.
Awesome.
You know, I mean, and I'm sure there's, you know, hundreds of them probably.
Sure.
But he had a pretty good list here, so we figured we'd read a few of them. One that he mentioned was vertically stacked headlights. Have you ever seen these?
Oh, yeah.
He mentioned the 66 and 67 GTOs. I recall them from, I think there's a Ford 500 long time ago that had stacked headlights as well. You know, one right on top of the other one, square headlights, but kind of an interesting look. I think I'm pretty sure that the station wagon that they had in National Lampoon's Vacation, the original Vacation.
Oh, you know, you might be right.
I think that car had four headlights on each corner, if I'm not mistaken, in a square pattern. I believe it was you know side by side and stacked on top of each other.
I remember thinking they looked weird.
Yeah, they were. That's pretty funny. I have to remember the name of that car. He also mentioned vent windows. He says he misses these, and I also do. And just total coincidence, hadn't read this before, but I was talking about these just this weekend.
You know what? It's a really good call, because now that I think about it, I didn't notice that, but they did stop making vent windows.
Yeah, they have. I've had a couple of cars with them, and I've, you know, been in many cars that have had it. A lot of pickup trucks had them at one point.
Yeah.
You know, the little triangular-shaped windows that are kind of up near where the rear view mirrors are, that you can angle to direct wind, you know, right on you. I mean, it was great. It was just excellent ventilation.
Yeah, that was a good design.
Yeah, it really was. It was really cool. It was simple, and I don't know why they've gone away. I just don't understand. It's got to be just a design thing. Let's see. Just going down the list here. Push-button automatic transmission.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad those are gone.
Roy said that his dad's 59 Plymouth Fury had these. It was five buttons on the left side of the dashboard, you know, to select the gear that you're in. Long gone.
Yeah, I don't need all of your expertise to assume that it's good that those were gone.
Yeah, that's probably right. Probably right. Let's see. One other thing that, you know, I guess we can just mention this, is that hood-mounted tacks. So a tachometer, hood mounted, so it's outside of the passenger compartment. Kind of, it's right in the line of sight. You know, you can see it on the hood. Definitely a sports car thing, but I think he said that the GTOs, 69 GTO had this feature. I think there was also, could be a Trans Am in there somewhere that had something like that. Now that I'm thinking back, kind of like the Smoking the Bandit days then, sometime around then.
I've never heard of that one.
I could be off on that one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Roy's got some pretty good notes there.
He does. Well, you know what? I'm going to mention one other one that we hadn't really talked about, but he mentioned steering wheel knobs. You ever seen these?
No.
I still see them on tractors and things like that. You know,
okay.
Steering wheels used to be huge wooden things, or you know, maybe plastic, but usually wooden. And there was a knob on the steering wheel that you could grab and kind of use as a guide to help you turn that giant wheel. The thing is that you didn't have to do this, you know, hand over hand type turning that you would do. You grab onto this knob and it pivots, it spins, it swivels.
Yeah.
And you could grab onto that knob and use that to kind of, I'm using my hand here like everybody can see it, but use that to make the turn. And it's real smooth and real fluid.
Sure.
Just kind of in way of easing that turn a bit.
And I guess to put this out for our listeners, the motion we're talking about almost resembles stirring.
Yeah, stirring.
And
yeah,
so it's like, I was looking at it from the right
angle. Yeah, that's right. And you will see these on tractors and things like that. You know, farm equipment sometimes will have something like this. And I think you can even buy something that you can clamp onto a steering wheel now if you wanted to. I don't know if they're legal or not, but...
Don't bother me with questions of legality, Scott. I think I'm going to get one. I think that's pretty good.
All right. Phew. That's all I have. Man, I've done a lot of talking.
Oh, man. Well, first, I think we should say thank you to Roy for writing in with such excellent trends.
Of course. Yeah, that was a good list.
And I'd like to take a second and plug a recent development on the homepage of our website.
You're talking about the blogs.
The High Speed Stuff blog.
That's right. Yeah, the High Speed Stuff blog is on the homepage. You can access it from there. And we talk about all kinds of things. I mean, it's, you know, news. It's topics kind of like what we cover during our articles or during podcasts, rather. And, I don't know, it's just got a lot of interesting stuff. You might want to check it out.
Yeah, and to all our listeners out there, thanks for tuning in. If you have any ideas for a topic or a suggestion for future podcasts, please send us an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.